607-326-4282. 1053 Main Street Gallery in Fleischmann's, designed as a space to support a vibrant and active artistic community nestled within the Catskill Mountains. 1053 Main Street Gallery is located in the historic, renovated Fleischmann's Telephone Building, open Thursday through Sunday and by appointment. Information about 1053 Main Street Gallery in Fleischmann's and upcoming exhibitions at 1053maingallery.com. Delaware County Solid Waste Management Center on State Route 10 in Walton, open Tuesday through Saturday for disposal and recycling, reminding patrons to keep trips to the center at a minimum due to higher than normal volume. Delaware County Solid Waste Management Center hours of operation and information about materials and disposal fees at 607-832-5800. 607-832-5800. Catskill Mountain Cleaning, specializing in Airbnbs, vacation homes, and private residences. Cleaning, firewood stack, trash removal, and small pest exterminating. Serving the Catskills region, including Margaretville, Andes, Bovina, and the surrounding area. More information at 607-261-1674 or catskillmountaincleaning.com.
I'm Dennison. I host Through the Looking Glass, where I discuss issues of culture, politics, and the environment with a little music on the side. Monday morning, 9 to 10, right here on WIOX Roxbury Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM, MTC Cable Channel 20, and WIOXRadio.org.
You are listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and MTC Cable Channel 20, and at 107.5 FM on the campus of SUNY Delhi on smart devices through the Radio FM app and everywhere at WIOXradio.org, where it's easy to donate. This is From the Forest. Every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John, how's it going?
Oh, things are good. How are you?
Not bad, not bad. What have you been up to?
Well, I found some ginseng in the woods the other day. Totally unexpected.
Really?
It was basically everywhere we would not send someone to go if we were going to describe where to go find ginseng.
Why was it unexpected?
It was a forest that had been low in elevation, around 1,400 feet. Low for ginseng, anyway.
Yeah.
1,400 feet. High-graded quite heavily in the pass. Thick beech mid-story coming in. A lot of fern. Definitely deer browse. What was coming through that from the high-grade was a lot of blackberry and raspberry, all of which was being browsed heavily. that was coming up. And I walked right up on a plant. I said, would you look at that?
No kidding.
Yep.
Yeah, that's weird. I wouldn't expect to see it there.
And it was dominated by red maple, not sugar maple. Sugar maple was above it. I think this was a seed, probably a seed that came from above on the hillside somehow.
I think I've ever seen it in red maple.
Yep.
Well, how about that?
So, yeah, I had to show the landowner what it was, and they were excited.
Yeah.
But I told them I wouldn't expect to find another one. That's just kind of random that it was there.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw one a few weeks ago, but it was where I would expect to see it, you know. Sugar maple and whatnot. But, you know, Catskill Forest Association will be leading a ginseng walk a couple weeks, right?
Yeah, August 21st.
Yeah.
That'll be... I forget where. You gotta find it.
You gotta find it.
Rider Hollow, maybe? I forget.
Yeah. Somewhere like that.
We'll see.
Yep. But, smoked some deer meat over the weekend, so that was good. Yeah. I don't know what cut, whether that's called the bottom round or the top round. I always forget. The one that might be the London Broil, it's kind of a big steak-like thing.
Yeah, so as far as the top round and bottom round, it's not the top and bottom as far as when the deer would be alive walking around with it. It's the top and bottom based on how you lay the quarter on the table to make your first cut when you're cutting the meat apart.
Is that right?
That's when it's oriented top and bottom. So I couldn't tell you without actually seeing it, and probably when I'm cutting it apart, because I always forget until I cut it apart.
Yeah, I can never retain that, but it's a big rectangular muscle group.
Yeah.
I love it. A lot of good steaks in there. Cut it against the grain. But it smoked pretty well. Need to make a few adjustments to my smoker. I need a 2-foot section of pipe. Get a little more draft.
Okay.
And I think I'd be in business.
You mean 2 foot higher or
yeah.
Horizontal?
Higher.
Gotcha.
I'm too horizontal.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah.
Too much smoke.
You smoke with your maple syrup arch, right?
Yeah.
How's that work?
It works great.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but, you know, it's a long ways horizontal, so if I raised it a little, I would have more heat for sure. But I could only get it so high. I got up to, like, 120 internal temperature and then brought it inside, got it to 138 or so, and it was good. Very good.
Very smoky flavor. What'd you use for wood?
Hickory, ash. The ash was better, to be honest, because it was drier.
Hmm.
You know, I think that's the problem. You got to cut it really fine. I cut it fine with a small axe, and it worked pretty well. And also some charcoal, hardwood charcoal. You know, get some clean burning stuff. You don't want too smoky.
Yeah, it can be overpowering sometimes.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Cool.
So,
well, saw a bear with two cubs the other day. They were tiny little things. It was kind of funny. They were running up over a stone wall. The mother just ran up over no problem. But the cubs, they had to vertically ascend like they were climbing a rock wall. When they were climbing a rock wall, but fun to watch anyway.
Yeah?
Yeah.
No kidding.
Strong little creatures, as small as they were.
Huh. Yeah, I haven't seen a bear in a while.
This was semi-expected. We went for a ride. Went for a ride up to our family's hunting camp.
Where's that? Finger Lakes?
No. Over in Millbrook area.
Oh, yeah.
And, went looking for... Went up there to mow the lawn, but on the way back, we were looking around, hoping we'd see one, and sure enough, we did.
Well, unfortunately, what I've been seeing a lot is what we're talking about tonight, is hemlock woolly adelgid, which is kind of old news to some people in Ulster County, Sullivan County, especially east of Highmount. Until this year, I see it on just about every hemlock tree, it seems.
Mm.
It's really unreal. I don't know what's going on. I don't know if it's this rainy weather in the last few years or whatnot. I'm not sure, but it's too bad. Hemlock is an important tree, at least to me. It's one of my four favorite trees. Last week, I think we talked about our favorite forests. We have discussed our four favorite trees, right, John?
One of your four favorite trees and your four favorite forest types were hemlock.
I know.
So you're at a big loss here.
Yeah. You know, it's a culturally important tree. You know, if you think about the Catskills, a lot of people think about the tanning industry. So basically paved the way for a lot of other industries to come in and created a lot of the hamlets that we have to this day. And if you walk around in the woods and you hike around, a lot of the trails follow old bark roads. So, you know, if they're narrow and kind of shoddy, they're probably made by guys that were going in the woods in the summertime and strip the bark off of hemlock trees and lay them in piles and take them out at a later date, you know?
Yeah, and they're just wide enough for an ox, right?
Yeah, oxen was usually what pulled them out. Also a good tree for fishing. I mean, if you're a trout fisherman, talking small fish here like brook trout, keeps the water nice and cold, and those roots also hold the stream bank together as well, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, the water temperature this time of year is when everybody's getting worried about the trout. I think it's 68 degrees is when water temperature is lethal for trout.
Is it? For brook trout?
Somewhere close to there, anyway.
Yeah. Erosion control, as I just said, but also camping, man. Great place to camp is under a hemlock stand. Unless you're dying from the hemlock woolly adelgid, and then the tops might break out in a windstorm, but you don't want that then. Wildlife, not the best wildlife tree as far as eating food from it, but for cover from the elements, for deer especially, from deep snow, and also from the wind. It's weird because, you know, trees, you wouldn't think this might be true, but the sun hits that tree and it creates heat. You ever seen in the winter how it's like a big well of melted snow right at the base of them?
Mm-hmm.
So hemlock's good at that, so there's always less snow, and also the branches and the boughs just block most of the snow.
They hold it up off the ground, and you'd be surprised at how much snow actually evaporates, right? It doesn't have to melt.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I learned this in winter ecology class. I was surprised to learn that. And the hemlocks will hold it up off the ground long enough for it to actually evaporate, especially a really fluffy snow like ones we might get. We don't really get much lake effect, but other parts of the New York State do, and other parts of the country. And that'll just go right to evaporation. You'll lose some of it that way. Not all of it, but those are all the reasons.
Does it go from directly from solid to gas?
I think it sublimizes, right? Is that the right word?
Holy cow, man. You're really tearing into my brain cobwebs right now.
I'd have to look that up, too, but
yeah.
I'm digging back from a college class 10 years ago now.
Yeah. About, yeah, a long time for me. But 20 years just about now. Shoot. But, yeah, it's a cool tree, especially a big hemlock stand. It's just beautiful, you know, and I'll say it. Really, really beautiful stand of trees. But hemlock has gone through, it's waxed and waned throughout the decades and centuries. And the 19th century, of course, there was a lot of hemlock, especially below 2,800 feet, I'd say, 2,700 feet elevation. You get a lot of hemlock.
Yep.
And then a lot of it was obviously cut for the bark, as we said. And it also grows back. It's been regenerating quite a bit. And as Dr. Michael Kudish, who wrote The History of the Catskill Forest, says, and I agree with him on this, is that it seems to want to regenerate in 80-year-old or older oak stands. And I agree with that, because around Sampsonville, where I live, there's 80-year-old plus red oak, white oak, and chestnut oak in the overstory. And hemlock is loving it. It really wants to come back.
Oh, yeah. Solid mid-story in some places. Just completely solid with hemlock.
Yeah. So, you know, if it's too bad because now you have these two insects, the hemlock woolly adelgid and the elongate hemlock scale, which must be absent of a media rep because people don't know about this, about the latter insect, which we'll talk about. So, hemlock, I feel, would come back. It has these two invasive insects and also deer browse. This, you know, hemlock boughs or needles are like dumpster diving for deer. But when they're wintering up in a hemlock stand and there's nothing else to eat, it's kind of like you and I, if someone like, I don't know, bound us to a chair next to the fridge and all that was in there was like broccoli. I don't like broccoli that much, or spinach. You'd eat it, you know. You're going to eat it eventually, you know.
Yeah, I hear you.
So, you understand what I'm saying here, John?
Well, it's, yeah. It's really, well, the deer are wintering there anyway, so, right? Especially if If the snow's so deep, they can't get to a better food source, even if it's out there.
I mean, deer have far exceeded this hemlock browsing. I mean, foresters used to call deer browsing on hemlock boughs as dumpster diving. Well, let me tell you. I just saw again, I didn't tell you about this, in Sullivan County, in Calicoon Center.
Yeah?
The whole row of Norway spruces was browsed. Again.
Incredible.
This is insane. I mean, Norway spruce doesn't provide any nutrition. It has prickly needles. Deer hate Norway spruce. They are browsing Norway spruce. They are starving to death, man.
Wow.
So, forget about the hosta and then all these other plants and trees and shrubs. If they're browsing Norway spruce in your area, you best be putting your plants behind some minimum or maximum security fencing.
You might need to upgrade to the 10-foot fences.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. But if you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. with Ryan and John. Tonight's topic is hemlock's nemesis, hemlock woolly adelgid, and elongate hemlock scale. All right. We'll first talk about the hemlock woolly adelgid, Adelgis sugae. This is a soft body scale, which is like a tiny little insect that sucks the sap out of the needles.
Okay.
Right? It's very noticeable, which is why we get a lot of calls about it, but it has really white cotton-like fluffy stuff, I think both sides of the needles, if it's really bad.
Usually on the underside is we're going to see it first, though.
Well, most people probably notice it on the top, really. They won't notice, you know what I mean, because they don't flip them over.
Yeah.
But they overwinter in there, so I think the females overwinter in the cotton-like fluff. Then you have crawlers that come out or whatever, and they suck the sap out of the needles. And it usually kills the tree about 8 to 12 years. So, what did I say 8 to 12? 2 to 8, I'm sorry. 2 to 8 years. Yeah, you have time. It's not like the emerald ash borer where, you know, 1 to 3 years, that tree's hurting, you know. Mm-hmm. It could be dead by then. So, you'll notice some your crown thinning out, meaning the foliage or the needles. Hemlock is the most shade-tolerant tree. So it should be completely full of live branches to almost the ground.
Yeah, very dense till where the deer are browsing.
Yeah. Unless it's, you know, a mature hemlock tree, then that's a different story. But a young hemlock can take the shade. All right? If it starts looking sparse, then you have a big problem. So, up next, we'll talk about the history of the hemlock woolly adelgid and how it entered the United States, Eastern Seaboard, and, of course, the Catskill Mountains.
My uncle used to love me, but she died. A chicken ain't chicken till it's licking good fried. Keep on the sunny side. My uncle used to love me, but she died. Bid me quarter 30 cents for a ring of keys, 365 for a dollar bill of groceries. I'll have me a car of my own someday, but till then I need me a ride. My uncle used to love me, but she died. My uncle used to love me, but she died. A chicken ain't chicken till it's licking good fried. Deep on a sunny side. My uncle used to love me, but she died. Hamburger, cup of coffee, lettuce, and tomato. Two times a dime to see a man kiss the alligator. One more time around free on the Ferris wheel ride. My uncle used to love me, but she died. My uncle used to love me, but she died. A chicken ain't chicken till it's licking good fried. Keep on a sunny side. My uncle used to love me, but she died. Apples are for eating and snakes are for hissing. I've heard about a hugging and I've heard about kissing. I read about it free in a 50-cent illustrated guide. My uncle used to love me, but she died. My uncle used to love me, but she died. A chicken ain't chicken till it's licking good fried. Keep on a sunny side. My uncle used to love me, but she died. Well, my uncle used to love me, but she died. A chicken ain't chicken till it's licking good fried.
Well, you try to figure that one out.
I'm confused.
Yeah. Well, it's all right.
It's a catchy tune.
It's Roger Miller. It's Roger Miller, man.
Yep. Sounds like it.
If you're just tuning in, From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., talk about a different forest-related topic. Tonight's topic is hemlock's nemesis, hemlock woolly adelgid, and elongate hemlock scale. Hemlock woolly adelgid. So it was accidentally introduced from Asia in 1951 by nursery stock. And it began causing noticeable damage by the 1980s. And I remember maybe in the 90s, I don't remember the 80s that much, but in the 90s, a lot of the hemlock stands on the Shangham Ridge, which is in southern Ulster County, started dying. I can remember like the Palmagat Ravine, which is this really big ravine on the ridge, and old growth, whatnot. And a lot of them started dying then. So it hit that area sooner, the Hudson Valley or Walkhill Valley, before the Catskills, it seems to me. I don't know if you heard about it growing up or not, John.
No, I never heard about it. I didn't even know what it was until I started working for Catskill Forest Association, honestly.
I believe you. When I was hired in 2007, very rare to find hemlock woolly adelgid west of High Mount on State Route 28 into Delaware County.
Did you ever find it?
Yeah. Fleischmann's, and right in the village. So just on the western side of High Mount, right? Mm-hmm. Fleischmann's is what, a minute from High Mount?
Yeah, a mile maybe.
So it was, and those hemlock trees are still there. I don't think they're dead. But this year, they not only have hemlock woolly adelgid, a lot of them don't look good.
Yeah.
Which really surprises me.
Yeah, the first one I looked at in Delaware County this year was, I'm guessing April or so. There was early April, maybe late March. There was still snow on the ground, but like patchy snow, you know?
Yeah.
And walking with the landowner, I was just noticing needles all over the snow. I'm like, this is weird. So I didn't even think to look, you know, didn't even think to look in that part of the county at all. So this is Arkville. We got looking around, found a hemlock that had a low enough branch to grab a hold of and turned it over. And sure enough, it was coated in adelgid woolly masses. So that's the first I noticed, and it's spiraled ever since. We've been finding it all over.
I'm finding it at the upper end of Drybrook Valley and I think maybe in Bovina. I mean, far into Delaware County. Greene County at 2,500 feet in elevation.
Wow.
Above Windham. So quite a bit. You used to get calls about a sick hemlock, and you went there, and you know, some trees have off years, you know. They'll get needle blights, or there's look-alikes that look like hemlock woolly adelgid, like spider mites, stuff like that.
Okay.
You know, they make like a, they spittle their little web or whatever you call it, and it looks like it, but it's not.
Yeah, usually bigger masses though, right?
Yeah, a couple years ago, the trees were brown, and I think it was just a needle blight the hemlocks had. Something was going on with them. There was nothing though. But they have hemlock woolly adelgid with it. So what do you do? How do you mitigate hemlock woolly adelgid? Will it go away on its own? I don't know. It doesn't seem to. I think it waxes and wanes. Some years are really better than others. You know, the same thing in Ulster County. Like, it's weird. Because in Ulster County, I feel like there's definitely woolly adelgid there and is elongate hemlock scale. But a lot of the hemlock, some of the hemlock trees don't have it.
Hmm.
Like, I was at a property in Olive Bridge, and some of them didn't have it. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. Like, how does this tree not have it? And then a lot of them did. But, you know, so it's weird. Some years are worse than others. But mitigating hemlock woolly adelgid, cultural management. So before we get into the chemicals, the first thing you can do is if you're planting hemlock or you have a hemlock stand that's already there, a residual stand, spacing, right? Because I've always noticed that whether it's a Norway spruce or a hemlock, they're always more susceptible to insects and disease if they're too tight. Have you noticed that?
Yeah. I learned this from Colin Miller, another forester in Delaware County, when he was talking to me about it when I was learning about hemlock woolly adelgid. He says, yeah, you got to thin the stands out. And that'll boost their immune system in other ways, right? It gives them more sunlight, let them be more resilient when a pest does move through, give them better health.
Yeah, I mean, they're a shade-tolerant tree, but that's something they tolerate. It doesn't mean they don't want more sunlight.
Yeah, right.
That's
good,
the difference.
Good way to put that, yeah.
So more spacing. Norway spruce used to be the ironclad tree that never got sick. A lot of rain lately, and we've been getting needle blights on conifer blights on Norway spruce. They're also extremely susceptible to coulee spruce gall adelgid, or is it spruce gall adelgid? Very similar. It's a little pineapple-looking thing. Always the case when they're too tight. Some people get lucky if their property has a lot of air circulation and wind. This is like when wind can be good to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. It blows away those fungal spores. And for whatever reason, the spruce tree might be healthy. But most of the time when they're too tight, they're going to be more susceptible. I also noticed with spruce trees, it helps them if you prune the lower branches. It seems to like, you know, lower branches can wick moisture into the tree.
Yeah.
It creates like a damp environment. If you prune some of the lower branches, that sometimes that seems to help. Not sure. The other thing you can do is provide mulch onto your trees. That seems to help. Especially on hot, dry days. I mean, and if it's in the yardscape, then providing 4 inches of wood chips or mulch really seems to help out the tree. You don't need to go more than 4 inches deep. You can go as wide as you want. I would go at least 4 feet in diameter. Wider the better, though.
Do you have to be careful about where you get this mulch? What might be in the mulch?
No, just good old wood chips. You know, you see when they put whole trees into a chipper, it's the best.
Okay.
A lot of towns have extra wood chips. Mm-hmm. Almost every town has wood chips. Shandaken has their stockpiled right on 28 there.
That thing's getting to be a mountain right now.
That thing's crazy, man.
Amazing.
Yeah, I guess no one needs chips because a lot of people were whittling away at that pile last year, but not this year. I don't see anyone. So, all right, so those are cultural things you can do to ward away hemlock woolly adelgid, and I would recommend that for just about any tree. So what about the chemicals, as British people say? You know they say chemicals?
Yeah.
I mean, it's their language, so.
Whatever.
Yeah, chemicals. So, chemical control. Well, now, this is not for a forest-wide treatment. This is not something you do for that. It's an arboricultural treatment. It's for a few trees. You can't live without, right? And you can do a few things to it. It seems to work really well. We use a recipe from Mark Whitmore, who's at Cornell University, and it uses two chemicals, imidacloprid and dinotefrin. The imidacloprid lasts 3 to 7 years. Dinotefrin lasts for 1 season. Dinotefrin's much faster, goes right into the tree. And imidacloprid is much slower, but lasts a longer time. And the way Cornell recommends to do it is a basal bark spray up to about 5-6 feet. You spray it onto the trunk, and it systemically goes through the trunk, magic, throughout the cambium or whatever, and throughout the whole tree, so that when this little bugger is feeding, it kills it.
So,
and it works.
What's the retreatment interval? Does that mean that the imidacloprid will last long enough?
If you just have hemlock woolly adelgid, you only need to do imidacloprid. You should probably do both, because you probably have elongated hemlock scale, too.
Hmm.
But Mark Whitmore, if it's an infested tree that's pretty bad, you probably should do both. You know, it's kind of 1-2 punch.
Yeah.
Get in there fast, knock it out, and then you have some long-time protection on that tree. Now, a lot of people don't like the chemicals of imidacloprid and dinotefrin because they're neonicotinoids. It can be harmful to bees. Just want to tell everyone, as a certified pesticide applicator, do you see most labels right on the label? You're not allowed to harm bees. This is especially true when you're doing something that flowers. Well, conifers don't flower.
Right.
All right, so that's why this is a safer treatment than spraying like a magnolia tree or something, you know what I mean, while it's flowering. You know, that's different. So we're spraying a conifer tree, and there's no bees around it. So
how often do you have to revisit the treatment?
Well, if it's a imidacloprid, it could last years. You should reassess it once every year or two. Most people, because the Catskills are so widespread and it's hard for us to get everywhere at the Catskill Forest Association, kind of just tell people what to look for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you see white cotton-like stuff, give us a call, you know? So.
Well, that's a good thing. I mean, be able to treat once and it'll last a long time.
Yeah, you can do this yourself. There's you used to be able to go to Lowe's and get bare tree and shrub, which is imidacloprid. That would be a soil drench. And you put it right around the flare, the butt flare of the tree. And it works. We know it works, right, John? Because we did it on that one tree as an experiment.
Yeah, we saw it.
And it was the only tree that didn't have hemlock woolly adelgid, and all the others still had it. That was in Arkville. So it does work. That one's general use, meaning anyone can buy it and use it. Then this dinotefrin and stuff, you have to be, they're restricted use, and you have to be a commercial pesticide applicator. If you're doing it for anyone else, it doesn't matter if you're spraying vinegar. Technically speaking, you have to have a license by the state if you're doing it for someone else, even if you're not paid. Just kind of new to a lot of people.
Right. If you don't own the property, you can't spray on it.
That's right. So there's that. Read the label. Label has they're not difficult to understand. The labels are written pretty plainly. I know a lot of people, like myself included, when I first started getting into chemicals, were intimidated by the label. And then you read them, and you're like, these labels are pretty simply written. They want you to understand it.
Yeah, there's a lot of information there, but it's laid out very, very well.
Yeah, and it's easy to find stuff too. You know. Sometimes you don't have to read the whole thing sometimes.
Right. So some things you might just be looking for a category of, like, forests, right? So that whole big label, all you need to read is that two paragraphs on forests, and that's it. In some cases, everyone's different, obviously.
Yeah, the way chemicals are regulated is what they are, the active ingredient, and then it's how they're applied as well. So some chemicals you can use on a basil bark spray, and others you can't use as a drench. Like dinotefrin in New York State, you can't drench. You can't use that as a drench on the soil. And then others you can only do stem injection, maybe. Some you can do all three, you know. So there's stem injection where you inject it into the tree. That's going to be more expensive usually. A basil bark spray, and then a soil drench. What do you think?
Yeah, a lot of chemicals are like that. I mean, some different percentages of dilution are required based on what you're doing with it.
Yeah, dosage, right? Know the dosage. You can't just, you know, don't just spray. One, you're wasting chemicals and money. Two, you might be harming something. And three, it's just not necessary.
Right.
You know?
More does not mean it's better.
Yeah, I mean, this integrated pest management, it's kind of this new thing about, you know, thinking about the ecology of things and spraying when you need to. I guess, you know, obviously I believe in that, but I also think what happened with integrated pest management is that pesticides became more expensive. It's like back in the 50s, they were spraying so much, but they were so much cheaper, it seems to me. I could be wrong about this. It'd be interesting to find out. These are just ideas. But as it became more expensive, people were like, well, I don't want to just, you know, spray high dosage every time.
Right.
You know?
You really need to spray that $600 right now?
Right. And of course, there were.
Is it worth it?
Yeah. And there were environmental impacts, of course, to wildlife and stuff like that. But something to think about. Up next, we'll talk about the most underrated pest of hemlock, I feel, is the elongate hemlock scale. That just doesn't get noticed, and it should. It's even been around longer than the hemlock woolly adelgid, go figure.
Take a picture. city is such a creep. The lights went out, the orange dry. We blamed it on the other guy. Sure, all men are created equal. Here's the church, here's the steeple. We stay tuned, we cut to sequel. Ashes, ashes, we all fall down. Broadcast me in tranquil noise until the time is low. Count your blessings, ignore the law of fear. Oh, yes, means war. It's been a bad day. Please don't take a picture. It's been a bad day. Please, it's been a bad day. Please don't take a picture. It's been a bad day.
All right, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. Tonight's topic is hemlock's nemesis, hemlock woolly adelgid and elongate hemlock scale. The first half, we talked about hemlock woolly adelgid. The second, elongate hemlock scale. For some reason, this insect, it wasn't taught to me when I was in school. We knew about woolly adelgid. And one forester who really clued me in on elongate hemlock scale is Chris Impetus, who left the Catskills for Alaska. I tell you, man.
Jumping ship.
Man. Yeah, we miss Chris. He was on the show a few times, probably. But it makes sense that he would know about this because where I find it the most is in Sullivan County. Some of the stands there have both woolly adelgid and elongate hemlock scale. Sullivan County has a strong history with hemlock trees. I don't know if that has anything to do with it, but back in the day, in the 19th century, when the tanning industry was well underway, they produced the most. I think they had the most tanneries in New York State. They had the most oxen at one time to haul the bark out of the woods. So it's pretty neat, but it's sad to see a lot of these hemlocks get infected there. Another reason why they probably have a lot of hemlock, a lot of poorly drained sites there, like swamps and stuff like that. And
yeah.
You find it there.
Huh. So a lot of the trees just can't grow there.
Yeah, it can tolerate it a little more. But Chris used to tell me, though, he would find it the worst on really dry ridge sites, like on top of the ridge, anecdotally. So I don't know if that has anything to do with it. But in any case.
Well, might be susceptible because of other stressors involved, right?
Yeah.
Top of a ridge is drier, poorer soils typically, shallower soils sometimes.
We know that's true with sugar maple. When mm-hmm. the forest tent caterpillar comes around and strips the trees of its leaves, it's always worse on the tops of ridges. And the USDA Forest Service, through their research, found that it was because it was less calcium on top. And the slopes are well-drained, and they have more calcium, and sugar maple seems to bounce back. To this day, you're looking around the Catskills, a lot of that worm kill or the forest tent caterpillar damaged stands of sugar maple are on towards the top.
Yeah, they're just remnant snags anymore, and they're hardly even trees.
But So Elongate Hemlocks, I was shocked to find this guy. It debuted in 1908 from China and Japan to the United States. It's been around a long time. The Latin name is Farinia externa. It's located in 14 eastern states from southern New England to Georgia and west to Ohio. In its native territory, 95% of it, like in Japan and China, are dined by a parasitoid. So it's kept in check there. But here, it's not, right? So Elongate Hemlock Scale in the Catskills. For now, it does not seem to be prevalent in Delaware County, like west of Highmount on State Route 28. That could change, maybe.
Well, maybe not. Hopefully not. Yeah, it's going to change. It'll probably spread with the rest, but you can keep it for now.
Yeah, I don't want Delaware County to have this one because this is, I think, far worse. Chemically controlling this little guy is much more difficult than woolly adelgid. Because it's, remember I said woolly adelgid is a soft-bodied scale? This is a hard-bodied scale, or an armored scale. It's got a little protective covering that protects it more from, say, chemicals. And what it is the female will be hiding underneath a small brown covering. So you have to flip the branch over, and on the underside of the needle, you got to look for these little brown coverings. Another symptom of that you have elongate hemlock scale is the yellowing of the needles from the bottom of the crown working its way to the top. They have multiple crawler stages, which is why it can be difficult to kill the insect throughout the growing season. So you really should spray in the spring or the fall. Because if you do it in the middle of the season, by the time the chemical gets in there, maybe the crawlers aren't around. But it's hard to do. You know, if you really want to get exact, you got to look up your growing degree days, right? And that tracks days above 50 degrees as an average, and that's when they're the most out. Catskills, that's really difficult to do. We do not live in a very monotonous area when it comes to temperature because we have elevation that drastically changes things.
Right. So,
I mean, you travel from here to Kingston. There is so much variation. And even in Ulster County, I mean, I've talked to people in Delaware County. They're like, oh, if you go south, it's always warmer. I'm like, well, you know, parts of Ulster County are higher than Margaretville. You know, like Denning is 2,400 feet.
It's a different world.
You know what I mean? Now, if you're in Saugerties at zero, well, yeah, sure.
Yeah, talk to people in the winter months when they talk about driving home in a snowstorm, how much the storm changed on their travel home.
Yeah.
And put it all together. You'll realize exactly what happens with elevation and temperature.
Absolutely. So, like I said, it's an armored scale, elongate hemlock scale. Brown covering is what you want to look for. It's extremely difficult to treat. It can only be treated with one chemical. If you don't remember anything else, it has to be dinotefrin, not imidacloprid. So only dinotefrin is going to kill the guy. Like I said, the timing is more difficult because of the multiple crawler stages. And let's see, what else? Both insects cause the tree to appear lacking in the foliage department. And if you have both, you have some trouble. You know, you can't really treat the tree if more than 20% of the crown or the live foliage or needles has been impacted. You know, you might, but a lot of times it's too far gone.
Okay, so now we're talking removal. What do you do? I mean, how do you even notice it quick enough? It seems like a lot of people, you know, they're looking at their crowns getting thin and then calling.
You might see fallen needles. You might see yellowing. A lot of people recognize that. But it goes undetected compared to the woolly adelgid. For some reason, that white cotton-like stuff sticks out to people more, which makes sense. It's white against a green background.
Right.
The brown is on the underside, so you don't recognize it. You know, it's like one member says, she works from home, and she's on her computer, and there's this beautiful hemlock tree that's just outside her door. And when she looks out on it, she saw the white cotton-like stuff, and that's why she called. You know, and you know in the summer that's not snow, so bam, you know, it sticks out to you more, I think. But if you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., and tonight's topic is hemlock's nemesis, hemlock woolly adelgid, and the elongate hemlock scale, and we're talking about the elongate hemlock scale. Hopefully, there's some biocontrols in the future. Cornell University is working on a hemlock initiative program, and they're playing around with predators, right? That's what a biocontrol would be. Predatory insects. And that includes, I believe, silver flies and beetles. And that's Mark Whitmore. We have to have him on again. We've had him on to talk about emerald ash borer when that first broke out. But we could probably have him on to talk about this.
Some of that's being released or at least tried, trial periods, right?
I believe so. Yeah. I really need to find out more. I know they were doing some experiments nearby here. You know, I think over near somewhere in Ulster County.
Hmm. Yeah, well, Mark Whitmore, he's the guy to call and talk to. We'll have him on the show eventually.
Yeah. But the USDA, the National Arboretum, did begin a breeding program back in the 1990s. And they sent search parties over to Asia for research. And they brought back seed sources of Asian hemlocks resistant to the hemlock woolly adelgid. So go figure, John. And what they do is they do hybridization programs. And I guess they hybridized Eastern hemlock with the Asian hemlock. So that might be something, you know. I don't know.
What are your thoughts on hybridization? Because that could be controversial.
Well, we'll take a break. We'll talk next about why hybridization. We might have to warm up to this idea.
Okay.
You know? All right? How about that?
Sure.
Yeah, we'll talk about that next.
Thank you.
All right, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. Tonight's topic is hemlock's nemesis, hemlock woolly adelgid, and elongate hemlock scale. So we're talking about biocontrols the USDA Forest Service might do. We're also talking about the hybridization program that was done in the 1990s by the USDA National Arboretum, where they sent search parties out there and hybridized Asian hemlocks with the American hemlock that might be resistant. So, you know, a lot of people, they want the pure hemlock just as they want the pure chestnut, and, you know, I could sympathize with that, but we might have to warm up to maybe a little bit more to this idea of hybridizing, because it's like we had Charles Mann on the radio show a few years back, and he talks about the Columbian Exchange that's still playing out in our forests. And the Columbian Exchange is basically, you got to go back to plate tectonics, right? Right, John? Plate tectonics, remember that?
Pangaea?
Yeah, Pangaea. That's the supercontinent. And then the continents separated, right? Well, our trade has, according to Charles Mann, and I agree with him as a forester, but is basically brought the continents back, not physically, but through trade, bringing back these organisms that have been separated. And China and Japan have a lot of similar trees we have. They have maple trees over there and hemlocks and all that.
Ash?
Yeah, but they've grown up and evolved with different diseases and insects. And I know a lot of people, you know, some of the people we've had on this radio show would disagree with this because they want all native, but it might be a losing battle. You might be fighting a losing battle. It's kind of like building sandcastles right next to the ocean. I mean, at some point, it's like, at what cost?
Right.
Do you want to pull out Japanese knotweed? Do you know what I mean? At some point, it's like, you know what? It's not going anywhere. We can't spray all of our waterways. You know, we can't spray all of our hemlocks. You know? So maybe a hybridization is something to think about. I mean, the Chinese chestnut does very well. I love the American chestnut. I think it was one of the most sorely missed trees for its wood alone. But the chestnuts are awesome. Chinese chestnut are good for wildlife, too. Nothing wrong with them.
I think the fear is, and it's a legitimate one, is, you know, eventually it's the new pest, and then the new pest, and then another new pest, and whatever it is, it's never going to stop. And the way we trade right now is, you know, if we hybridize everything, I mean, well, there's no going back from that, right?
There's no going back.
Pandora's out of the box again. So
yeah.
I don't know. It's something that...
Things have always changed. I just got done finishing a book. Well, last year, I can't remember the name of the book. I have it at home. And he talks about how hybridization has happened for millennia. He talks about the Italian sparrow and the Spanish sparrow or something. Anyway, he used that as an example of how a new sparrow was created from the hybridization of those two.
Mm-hmm.
And he gives many other examples that have occurred in the New World and the Old World. And I feel like that's what's just going to happen. I think it's going to happen no matter what we say. It might take a long time, but it's going to happen.
Yeah, it's one of the paths of speciation, right?
Yeah.
New species.
This guy was claiming that, yes, a lot of species have been killed and extinct, but what we don't talk about is all the species that have actually been created. And he goes into that in his book quite a bit and claims that actually maybe more species have been created. And it's interesting. But, you know, again, as REM's song, where I was playing before, the media wants to harp on the negative things, and there's negative things. This hemlock woolly adelgid is a negative thing. I'm not saying it's not. It's terrible. Like I said, it's one of my favorite trees, one of my favorite stands, one of my favorite forests. But at the same time, you know, there are other things that are going well in the forest, too. But tonight we're talking about some two bad ones. But, yeah, hybridization could be something to look at.
Well, I don't want to see hemlock lost. I mean, I'll take a hybrid forest of hemlock before losing all forests, right?
Yeah. Look at apples, right? Apples that regenerate in the Catskills. I bet you if you do a genetic study on them, I bet you they have adapted to the Catskill Mountains. I mean, here's a tree that was originally from, what, Kazakhstan?
Mm-hmm.
In a high elevation, dry, semi-arid or arid area of the Middle East, wherever Kazakhstan is, right, John?
Right, I couldn't tell you its climate. I have no idea.
Yeah, which is why this tree throughout its life is very susceptible to anthracnose or leaf diseases when we get a lot of rain, like right now. But still, it can take our rain, more than 40 inches of rain. How did it do that? How did it get used to Europe and Britain, Great Britain and North America, where we get a lot of rain. It adapted. Mm-hmm. That's what it did. And you've seen wild pear trees, and apple for that matter, that form thorn-like branches to keep herbivores away. I've seen it.
I'm dreading pulling splinters right now.
Yeah, so we don't talk about the positive things in environmentalism too much. It's all too common to talk about the negative things in environmentalism, mainly because it gets your attention, you know, maybe gets you to donate.
No study's funded by the good. It's always the bad, right?
It's always the bad, and there are bad things. Yeah, they're bad things, but I don't know. We got about a minute and a half left. And if you missed the show, tonight's topic was hemlock's nemesis, hemlock woolly-adelgid, and elongate hemlock scale. And what drew my attention to talking about hemlock woolly-adelgid tonight was its march west into Delaware County, up and over High Mount, or the Delaware and Hudson Divide, the Catskill Divide, right, that divides the two big watersheds, and is now in here like redcoats streaming into the Delaware County area. No? Too far? I keep going with the analogies.
Keep going. I want to hear.
Been reading about the American Revolution lately.
Yeah.
So it's here. It's invading, and I don't know how to stop it. But if you do want to preserve a few near your house that you can't live without, it can be chemically controlled until maybe a biocontrol is finally successfully released by the USDA. And if you're wondering if biocontrols have been successfully done, yes, they have. Gypsy moth, I believe, is one big example of biocontrols. That gypsy moth is kind of like forest tent caterpillar today. It comes and goes and comes in waves, but it's not as bad as it used to be.
That's a good point.
Yeah. So,
speaking of those, though,
yeah,
maybe the Catskills, it's our year next year. I don't know.
Forest tent? Oh, gypsy moth?
Gypsy moth seems to be east of us in the Berkshires and west of us in the Finger Lakes.
Yeah.
I don't know if we're building the population here for next year. Who knows?
We don't have many oaks, which is the preferred host of it. But obviously, I'm partial to oak, so I don't want to see them stripped. It's the forest tent caterpillar that really wreaks havoc on us because we're so heavy to maple.
Right.
But we'll see when the worms come back. And,
more worm kill.
Next week, get Mr. Mead, Mr. Gary Mead, and have a good night.
Good night, everyone.
Oh, the neon lights were flashing and the icy wind did blow. The water seeped into his shoes and the drizzle turned to snow. His eyes were red, his hopes were dead, and the wine was running low. And the old man came home from the forest. His tears fell on the sidewalk as he stumbled in the street. A dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For his castle was a hallway, and the bottle was his friend. And the old man stumbled in from the forest. Up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way. His ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd ended up this way. Getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining, the face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of a long forgotten year. When the wildflowers did bloom in the forest, she touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by his name. And then he heard the joyful sound of children at their games in an old house on a hillside in some forgotten town.